I'm sitting there, and he's like, you can go? I'm like, nah, probably not. Finally, I'm like, I could tell he's getting antsy. He wants to go throw someone around. I'm like, all right, I'll go. He goes, yeah? I go, yeah. There ain't no way you can throw me off, though. I said it just to piss him off.
Welcome back to Knox and Nature, the podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else you feel like talking about. We are back on our normally scheduled, our normal schedule.
Not really, because it's Saturday. Not even Sunday.
It is Saturday, but I at least have more than a few hours to edit this podcast before it goes live. So there's that.
We're ahead of the curve.
We are right now. That's a good thing. So, yeah. We've got a few things going on. Jared's currently making a drink, if you can hear any of that. So that's what's going on. But we got some deer. It's actually not even deer regulation stuff. It's license-based things, proposals for the 2026 state budget through Gretchen Whitmer. And, yeah, we're on the verge of turkey season. There you go. So we're getting close to things getting pretty interesting. Some TAC events coming up, which we'll talk about possibly with Justin, because I know he was not here towards the end of the episode last time, so maybe we'll get into TAC a little bit. But yeah, so let's talk about these proposed changes for license fees. So this would affect boating fees, fishing fees, and hunting licenses. And essentially this is Whitmer saying that the DNR is not bringing in enough revenue. So for resident adults, the proposal would increase the base license fee for small game hunting from $11 to $17, which is not crazy. Resident minors would see an increase from $6 to $10, and non-residents would see an increase from $151 to $165. It would cost residents $115, up from $76, to purchase combination hunting and fishing licenses that would increase from $226 to $275 for non-residents. An all-species fishing license would cost residents $40 instead of the $26, which that is a huge jump. The base jump...
Wait, it's $26 right now for a fishing license. So it was going to be what? $40?
$40.
Wow.
That's a huge jump.
That's dumb. There's so many people into... Like, I feel like fishing is way easier to get into than hunting.
Yeah, I think that's why they're doing it, too. I think that's why they're doing it. It's because more people will buy it. The fee would increase... The fee, would increase from...
I have a hard time buying a fishing license. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I don't want to spend $26.
Yeah, you go on free fishing day.
Yeah.
So for non-residents, it would increase from $76 to $90, and it would rise from $11 to $30 for seniors. So that all came from a Fox News article, which was just the first one I popped up when I Googled this issue. So Governor Whitmer's state budget proposes license fee increase for hunting, fishing, and boating for Fox 17, if you want to check out that article. But
what was the boating?
The boating one, that was, let's see here. So,
is that like your registration tags, you mean? Like your MC tag?
Yeah. So it said.
Well, probably that, and maybe an increase on the tax of like gas and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I feel like rec gas isn't just boating, though.
So,
dirt bikes and cars. And
no, but if you buy gas at like a marina, it's more expensive than.
Okay, so listen to this. 1993 was the last time that motorboat license fees increased. The fees currently range from $14 to $448, depending on the size of the boat. The proposal would change the range from $24.17 to $773.57.
Ooh.
So, here's my problem with this. The DNR already came out and said that they want to lower the cost of tags when it comes to deer hunting in order to encourage people to, you know, buy more deer tags, specifically antlerless tags, dropping those down to $5 a tag to, you know, basically incentivize other people to harvest more does because we have such an overpopulation issue. But then once you start So they're like, okay, we can't touch that. We've already decreased the money here, but they're trying to, I guess, make up for that in other areas. $11 to $17 for a base license is not a huge jump. Like, even, I don't know why they said 17. I don't know why they wouldn't just make it like $20, right? Or 15. It's like 17 is such a weird number to land on. But regardless, I understand, like, the state still needs to make money, you know, for conservation hopes, whatever. But also at the same time, like, somebody like me, right? If a, let's say I buy two antlerless tags a year. Okay, that's $40. Well, I could buy five antlerless tags next year for $20, or four antlerless tags next year for $20 if they're five apiece. Okay. So you would inevitably end up with more people buying antlerless tags. You know, you'd make up for it because you might be like, okay, I'm not going to buy a separate antlerless tag because it's an extra $20. Mm-hmm. But if it's just an extra $5, you're like, yeah, you know, I probably won't need this, but I'll take an extra antlerless tag just in case.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to burn up a buck tag or what, you know, whatever it may be. I just don't understand why. And the fishing one's crazy. $26 to $40. That's a huge jump. And you're talking, you know, so for me, like my, at the end of high school, right, it was all messed up with COVID and everything. But that was one activity that we could do. It wasn't restricted. We just go fishing. Well, $26 in high school for fishing, like, it's not a ton of money, but you're like, okay, I've got to work, you know, a couple hours to be able to pay for this fishing license, right? Most of the time you're making like $12 an hour. So now it's $40, and it's not like high schoolers are getting paid that much. You know, that's where my head goes. It's like, how many people are going to actually pay for that $40 license as opposed to just like, oh, I fish here all the time. I've never been stopped by anybody. No one's ever questioned it. I'm just going to go do it until they tell me I can't. And then you're going to have a bunch of people, you know, create a bunch of quote-unquote criminals or people breaking the law because they don't want to pay $40 for a fishing license. And that's all species license. So I get it. Like,
and that's like the only fishing license you can buy.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's cheaper for kids, too. Like, I don't know what the age cutoff for is.
It's free. If you're under 16,
yeah, okay,
kids can fish for free. I think non-residents, there is a license that you have to buy. But if I remember correctly, the last time I bought a fishing license, if you were under the age of 16, it was free. So I don't know. Maybe make a kid's fishing license $5.
I don't remember 100% accurate, but when I worked at the bait shop, I'm pretty sure for kids out of state was like $3 a day.
Yeah.
But I'm not totally sure on that.
That sounds right. Because I know they do daily stuff, and then they do annual for non-residents too. If you like come up here in the summer or something like that. I don't know. That to me, because the boating part is where you run into issues, right? So let's say, you know, Steve over here has a bass boat. And it costs him, you know, $60 to get his tags, you know, for whatever, his MC number or the, you know, the little sticker.
Yeah.
It costs him $60 and then he pays $26 for his fishing license. Okay. So he's in $86 at this point just to be able to go fishing with his boat. So now you increase the license and the tag cost. Hold on. We're all getting over being sick, so I apologize. But now you increase both of those. He goes from having essentially a $90 investment to double that. You know, he's going to be paying.
Right. And I think he's
paying $200.
I think for those guys, it's not as big a deal. But like if you have if I had a little 14-foot John boat, you know, you got to register or whatever, it's a $400 boat. You got to spend $200 to go use it.
Yeah. Well, would you say it was like 14 originally, and now it's...
The minimum was 14, and now the proposed new minimum is like 27 or something like
that. Okay, so it's still not too bad.
Yeah, it's still not bad. But
my thing is, like, I guess for people who have huge boats and, like, they're already factoring in the cost of everything when they get a boat that big. But I'm just thinking of a certain guy who has a very large Sea Ray who's probably not going to be happy about the large increase.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, at the same time, people like that also factor in those costs of owning that boat.
Right. Nothing on that boat is cheap.
No. Gas is, what, like $300 a weekend?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. It would not be. It would not be cheap.
I know my dad's buddies, they would come down once or twice a year, and they would do easily $300-$400 a day in gas. Mm-hmm. They've got those offshore cigar boats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're on like a, let's say you're in like a Four Winds, you know, like 24 or like 240 Horizon, right? So you're in a 24-foot bow rider and you're like tubing or, you know, water skiing.
Tubing is expensive. It sucks a lot of gas.
And you're driving around the lake all day. You know, you get a bunch of your buddies together, you're driving around the lake all day. And you, yeah, dude, I mean, to fill up a fuel tank on a boat, because you're paying for wreck gas already, which is already, you know, say $4 a gallon. Okay, it's $100 to fill up your boat, and you got to do that twice. So now it's $200 on a fucking, like, party boat, basically.
Yeah. My opinion is I feel like the hunting and the fishing ones are kind of, the boating one, it maybe isn't quite as big of a deal, because I feel like part of owning a boat is just knowing that you're going to have to, boat is... The definition of boat is a hole in the water surrounded by wood that one throws money into.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few acronyms.
Or break out another thousand or whatever.
It is kind of an interesting thing, though, that like the recreational boaters are paying for a lot of conservation stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like is Pittman Robertson, you know about Pittman Robertson on firearms and ammo and...
No.
Stuff like that. It's basically like a national fund.
Okay.
So there's I can't remember what it is. It's like an 8% tax or something on guns and ammo.
Uh-huh.
And it all goes into this pool, and then that gets distributed to the states.
Yeah.
From a federal level, it gets distributed to the states specifically for conservation. And there's one for the boats, too, for, like, fishing. Like, so it's on, I think that one's called, like, it's like Dingle Johnson or some shit. It's got a funny name.
Yeah.
But, So there's the hunting one, which is guns and ammo, and then there's the water one, which is, you know, fishing gear, boats, so like boat gas and stuff. That's where a lot of it comes from. So the recreational boaters are paying for a lot of the conservation stuff, which they probably don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a trade-off with that, right? Because whether they know it or not, their waters have to be maintained from a conservational perspective, because that's if you have like algae or seaweed or invasive species that take over, you know, and you've got a different, you know, whether it's plant or animal fish species that get out of control, you're not going to have a place to use that boat anyway. Yeah. So it's kind of a trade-off.
The other thing that I want to add in there is, you know, recreational boaters, I feel like, take the hardest toll on lakes because you've got people power loading and unloading from their trailers.
Creating
wakes
all the time.
Wakes creating erosion. The boat motors generally are going to leak a little bit of oil or gas into the lake.
Yep.
They take a toll on the lakes.
Yeah. I think it's a good thing. It's
and
one
the
of
lake
the,
shore.
The biggest funders of conservation is those two acts. But kind of where I was going with it is there's been a lot of words about like making like a backpack tax. So like on other, you know, camping, backpacking, mountain biking, like those dudes.
Interesting.
That aren't paying anything towards conservation but are using all those resources. There's been a lot of talk about it and stuff, and it's just an interesting.
Well, it is weird because if you pay
big hit because like guns and ammo, it's always been there. It was like, I think the 40s or 30s or something when they started it.
Yeah.
So we don't notice it because it's always been there.
Yeah.
And it's just built into the price. But if they added that to, you know, outdoor like backpacks and stuff, a freaking Kefauver would be $1,200.
Yeah, but you have to also think about, like, if you are buying, I guess, like, my perspective, if you're buying something like that, you know, backpacking bag or whatever, at some point in your process, you're going to be paying for something towards conservation. Like, you're going to go backpack, for instance, a national park, and you're going to pay for a backcountry permit. That backcountry permit, it might cost you $20.
Right, but think of, like, the, I don't know, think of the Vasa Trail.
For the longest time, right. I never
paid. You don't
pay
anything for the Vasa Trail.
I would do the North Country Trail all the time.
Yeah.
There's, like, a, I think it's 13-mile loop or 7-mile loop or something like that. Right. The Manistee by Red Bridge, that was, I would go backpacking there all the time. Like, that was, we didn't really go to many other places.
Yeah. Side note, that's where I want to go on our backpacking trip whenever we decide to go. I want to go that Manistee, whatever.
It's a really sweet spot.
Anyways, like, if the state's trying to increase funding on stuff, maybe the way to do it is not increase license prices. That could be a barrier to entry for some people.
Yeah.
You know, why wouldn't we, you know,
tax the goods, not the permits.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, there's another,
like,
thought,
I mean,
to
how
that.
How much money, you know, you guys know, like, you know, on the Vasa Trail, on the mountain bike, like, it's huge around here.
Yeah.
I mean, how much money could be brought in if you put a 5% tax or a 3% tax on mountain bikes?
There's another thought to that, too, because, like,
$2,500 mountain bikes all day long.
Right. And so that, but that's my point. Like, you had mentioned, okay, a Kefauver is going to cost you $1,200, which would be true, but, like, would you not buy it at that point?
No.
If you're like, oh, it's a couple hundred dollars more.
Another 3% to us, one person's not going to make that much of a difference.
Right.
You know, it's not going to be the...
But my point is, like, if you have somebody who's getting into fishing, they have a 3% tax on, you know, a fishing rod. They could go buy a $20 rod, and they have a 3% tax on that. They're not going to notice anything.
Right.
But the people who are going to pay a lot are the guys who are really into it. So your barrier to entry is less, but if you're like, hey, rather than a $20 rod, I want to go buy this $400 Luz spinning rod or a $600, you know, Orvis fly rod or something like that, that's where you're going, okay, now 3% of $600 is going to be a lot more money than 3% of $20. Right. So that guy's going to pay for it.
Right, but at that point, he's using the resource way more.
Yeah, right. But that's my that's the trade-off. Yeah. As opposed to basically what they've created is a flat rate for everybody. Okay, if this is your barrier point,
and
that's your access point.
The thing that I like about, like, the Penny Robertson and Dingo Johnson is that money is strictly dedicated to conservation. Like, you know, fishing, hunting and fishing license, the state can do whatever they want with that.
Yeah.
So you could just be throwing that money away. Like, we don't know.
Touching on what Nick said, like, that tax and barrier of entry, you know, someone who's spending that much money on a reel and whatnot, they're either bad with money and they have too much money and they're just going to blow it on stuff like that. So the tax isn't going to matter to them.
Yeah.
Or they're justifying it saying, you know, hey, I do this all the time. I can afford this nice thing because I'm going to use it and I'll actually notice the difference.
Yeah.
And for someone, just like Justin said, that person's using the resource more.
Yeah, 100%.
They should put more money into it.
Yeah, and so, like, to be completely honest with you, of $40 from an increase of 26, like I said, that's you know, almost double what it was, basically. But also, $40 isn't a crazy amount of money. You spend $40 to go out to eat.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
the other thing,
that part, I guess, is a little bit more understandable, you know, where it's like, okay, is it really going to cost that much more? And we're like, holy cow, like, it's getting really expensive to do this. Or have the prices just been so low for so long to where it doesn't even, like, for me, a base hunting license costs $11. That doesn't surprise. If they came out tomorrow and said it's $25 now, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like,
right,
we probably needed to adjust that price anyway. But just because that's your base hunting, you know, hunting to me, I feel like is different than fishing. You have to kind of know what you, like, you would have already been involved in the resources to go hunting, right?
The other
thing
is,
you've got to know an area and you're going to go in, you're like, we're going to go squirrel hunt here versus, like, like fishing, there are people who could not care less about hunting or conservation or guns or, like, all kinds of people from all different places of the state are going to go fishing because it's just something to do when you're on the water. But it's a niche type of person who's going to go hunting. That's my opinion.
I think touching on that, and I'm not trying to steer us way off track here, but if you're going to have the mindset of, hey, we probably should have adjusted that a while ago, you know, if you're looking at that like, hey, we need to make this stuff more expensive because it's been a while since we adjusted it, the mindset also goes along with, like, raising minimum wage in the state of Michigan, because the state of Michigan wants more money. They should also be putting more money into, you know.
Yeah, it's
not to sidetrack us a whole bunch, but that's kind of
no. I get what
mindset.
You're saying. It's a juggling act too, because the hard part about that is, like, we're gonna raise minimum wage, which means business owners have to pay their employees more. So especially small business owners are going to be raising their prices of whatever their product or service is, and so then your consumer is paying more. So they're going to be a little bit more frugal with their money, but it's going to even out because they are also getting a pay increase. You know what I'm saying? Right. So at the end of the day, I feel like it would eventually even out, but we're also probably, I mean, I don't know. I'm not an economics expert, but to me that feels like we're just going to devalue the dollar. So
yeah,
it's a little bit weird. I do, like,
something
not,
else
not
to
get crazy
to
political, but Trump had proposed a thing for getting rid of the penny. Technically, a penny is not a thing. I learned that. There's technically no such thing as a penny in U.S. currency. It's a one-cent piece.
Oh, yeah.
A penny came over from, like, the U.K., whatever.
It sounds they're British.
Yeah. But regardless, they want to get rid of it because it costs, like, 13 cents to mint new ones, you know, a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so
aren't nickels the same way?
Yeah, I think so. So they somebody had proposed, like, hey, why don't we just, like, make every, like, a quarter or a dime, you know, 10 cents.
Yeah.
It's like, why don't we just make that, like, the minimum? It's like, yeah, that makes sense, because what can you do with 1 cent now? Well, back in the day, 1 cent was like a dollar. You go to Joe's, you know, store, and you go buy a candy for 1 cent. You know what I'm saying?
That's very true. Nothing costs just 1 cent.
Nothing costs 1 cent. It doesn't make any sense. Nothing really, yeah, right? But nothing really, think about it, nothing really costs a dollar anymore.
There's a dollar
store. Arnold Palmer.
Yeah.
Well, sure, yeah.
Dollar store is not a dollar, buddy.
Some things are.
It's $1.25 now.
That's true. Whole country.
You know, so, but a quarter, what costs 25 cents now? Well, you used to be able to get a cheeseburger from McDonald's for 50 cents.
Yeah.
You know, so from Costco, you can get a piece of pizza and, or, you know, whatever, hot dog and a Coke for $1.50 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's one place. So it's, I get it, right? Like, they're trying to play this juggling act. But my question is, if your goal is to bring money into the state itself, it would be one thing if they were like, hey, our waters and our forests are really poorly maintained right now, and we're going to increase the fees or the taxes for the people who are using these resources so that they can help fund our projects and our conservation efforts to make it better for the people who are enjoying it. That would make sense. But if you're looking around the state and you're like, okay, we need to raise more money to fix the roads, and you're like, well, the DNR doesn't bring in that much money, that's the part where I'm like, okay, but why are we getting punished because Lansing roads are dog shit?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there needs to be, maybe it costs more money to register a car in a bigger city because there's more people on the roads there, so they don't last nearly as long.
Right. I like paying for conservation.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't want to be paying
conservation
and then have it
that's going towards
and all the
money. Yeah, you don't want it hidden in something else.
It's, hey, we're going to use this to go build a new statue at a school.
It's called money laundering is what the state is doing. Maybe. I don't know. But that's
we're going to raise your taxes to fix the roads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roads are all still
but maybe even not, even if they didn't disclose it, they're like, hey, this money's going to conservation, and then it just gets pooled in with all of the other state-funded money, and then they spend all the money on things that most people would be like, which, me too, to an extent, would be like, yeah, it's probably more important to fix our roads than it is to study a fish species in the Great Lakes, yep. right? But at the same time, hey, we've already paid a certain amount of money for what we thought was going to be conservation efforts, and it's being used for something that's not that. I don't like that idea at all.
You want to know something that pissed me off this morning?
Sure.
I was driving back from Gaylord, and I was following a plow truck, and I swear this dude, like, it didn't snow that much last night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was no snow on the roads. There was a little bit of, like, you know, all those farm fields over there, a little bit of drifts and
yeah.
kind of snowy road or whatever. But this dude, I think he was just driving around and pressing random buttons because, like, he'd flip the salt on for 30 seconds, turn it off. And then, you know, 6 minutes later, he'd flip the salt on again for a minute, turn it off.
And was it on, like, wet portions of the road?
No,
or was it just,
it
like,
was just
randomly?
It was completely random. And then he'd slow down. He'd put out his side blade. He'd plow the side of the road that had maybe an inch or two of snow on it.
Yeah.
And then he'd lift it up. And then he'd drive for a little bit, speed up, and then he'd slow down. And just random spots. There was no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this dude's just driving around fucking off. Like, it was so weird. And I followed.
And those plow drivers get paid a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, what the hell's going on?
You know what
on?
Pissed me
like,
off,
this
though,
dude has
that day,
no reason to be out.
That day,
And then
what
when
was
you
Wednesday?
Do need them, they're not out.
Mm-hmm.
It was Wednesday night to Thursday morning was that. That's when it was, like, really shitty driving into work, whatever.
Yeah.
I passed, like, 4 plow trucks, and they're all just sitting on the side of the road. And it's just slush in the middle. I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
I get it. But also, like, you guys check the weather just as much as we do, and you start at 4 in the morning. I'm coming through at 7:30.
I've had the Kalkaska plowing this year has been so bad. But, yeah. like, there's been literally a foot of snow where I'm almost getting stuck in my subdivision.
Yeah.
And they don't come for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then I've had it where it snows maybe
2 inches.
2 inches.
Yeah.
And they go around my subdivision 4 fucking times and just scrape the crap out of the pavement and knock over mailboxes. And it's like, what the fuck are you just doing?
I mean, my guess with that is it takes them a longer amount of time to move more snow when you get a foot of snow.
Yeah. Well, what happened?
And that's probably what they would tell you.
They had they had a millage this year.
Yeah.
And it got denied. They wanted like a ridiculous amount of money for a new building.
So now you're getting punished.
And yeah, now they're all pissed off.
Politics.
Yeah, it's something else.
The other thing is not to get all old man-ish here, but I feel like there's just a major lack in work ethic and people who know how to fucking like do a job at work, period.
Yeah. Our old driver,
I was at Chick-fil-A. Dude sitting there bagging orders, like, I don't know if he had 1.5 brain cells running at
super slow.
I mean, was just like, took him forever to find the sauces he was looking for, and he'd like look at it for a minute and then throw it in the bag, and he'd stand there looking around, and he'd grab another one, and he'd look at it, and he'd throw it in the bag, and I'm like, what the fuck? What is taking so long?
He's probably high as fuck.
Yeah, that too. But,
That's so weird.
We've gotten really off topic. Something I wanted to bring up was snow permits and RV and trail permits. Are those getting increased at all or no?
You know, I didn't have an opportunity to read the entire article, but
because
yes, I'm guessing
that's another one that's really hard on trails.
Mm-hmm.
Is RV. I feel like snow, not so much, but those guys, snow is also expensive because they're paying for groomers.
Yeah.
That's what gets me. Like, I understand, like, it's super expensive, for especially with the weather around here. You might only go snowmobiling an average winter now.
It's
three
expensive,
or four times.
But those trails better be groomed. And
right.
then when they're not, it's frustrating.
It
up in the UP, they were terrible.
Yeah, well, that's
huge
like,
whoops. Every single trail, there was always really bad whoops. Out in Manistee National Forest, my parents were going to Lost Pines Lodge. And there's a way you can get there by truck or you can get there by snowmobile. And they got lost and they were on the snowmobile trail. And they had, like, snowmobilers want to fight you over that shit.
Oh, yeah.
They're pissed off when you were in the trail.
Right. So it sucks.
They felt bad.
I've been on both sides of that that argument. And
We did that with mountain bikers.
No, my parents felt awful.
Yeah.
We did that with mountain bikers one time. We were on a bunch of, like, seasonal roads and two tracks
and mountain
stuff.
Bikers don't pay for shit, though.
No, hold on. Because we were on a bunch of seasonal roads and two tracks, whatever, and we're just like following roads. We're like, what's over here? Let's go this way. Let's see what's up. All of a sudden, Jake and I are driving. It's like, I don't know. We're probably doing like 40 on a dirt road. You know, like we're going pretty fast on a dirt road. All of a sudden, like 20 yards in front of us, two bikers just go whizzing by on a crossroad. We're like, what the hell? And they're mountain bikers like way out here. Like, that's weird. We pass it, and then we're probably 20, 30 yards past the road. Two go whizzing by behind us. We look on Onyx. We're on the Vasa Trail.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, but that's the other thing. Is like, it's not marked very well.
No, I've been on the Vasa Trail with a snowmobile, and like you get on it, and you're like, wow, this trail's really nice. And you're like, oh, shit, like this is probably the Vasa Trail.
That's why.
But then also like out by Supply Road, they started taking like all those two tracks around there,
yeah,
and making them groomed trails. And it's like, you know, we had our little loops and places to get to on the snowmobiles and stuff, like bombing down two tracks and go here. Like, we didn't go on the snowmobile trail a lot. You hit power lines and whatever.
Yeah.
Well, they started freaking making every single two track into a groomed trail. And it's like,
now everybody's on them.
Now everybody's on them, which isn't a big deal, but then they don't want snowmobiles on them. And it's like, dude, this is just a two track. You can't just groom it and then say no one else can use it.
Yeah.
Like, but we had people getting pissed off at us because it was like, well, we're trying to get down to this little lake right here or whatever, or we're trying to get over here.
Right.
It's the only two track to do it, or it's the only little, you know, road to do it. You can't be mad for, you know, you just can't take over every single two track in this area and make it a freaking trail.
Going back on that Lost Pines Lodge, there is a section that to get there by truck, like you can come in from the west side of the trail. If you come from the east side, it's all snowmobile trail. But if you come from the west side, it's like two track meant for vehicles and whatnot. And the problem is there's one section where you have to cross over the snowmobile trail.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents were like, yes, we don't think you can really bring vehicles. I'm like, no, it's a crossing. Snowmobiles are going to have to cross roads.
Yeah. There's lots of spots where the snowmobile trail crosses the power line or whatever.
Yeah.
You just know if you're on the trail, it's usually marked. Like,
literally, hey, last time I was out in Gaylord, there was a, I don't even remember. This would have been early January, like first good snow, and you know, they've got those trails on the side of the road that'll cross over and go towards like Otsego Lake and whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm driving in my truck, and this guy is, you know, it's 55 on that. Oh God, what road would that be? I guess it would be Otsego Avenue, but I'm not sure what it would turn into. You know, some sort of Michigan highway. But I'm headed to the south end of Otsego Lake to take Mansalona Road all the way back. And I'm doing 55, 60 maybe. Dude next to me is on a snowmobile hauling ass. Like, he's doing 80 mile an hour at least. You know, just flies past me. Gets to that crossing, you know, and he's, I don't know, I'm maybe 100 yards from this crossing, right? He flies past me, turns, and then it's like, I'm not slow. At this point, I'm 40, 50 yards, you know. So he turns like he's going to cross the road right in front of me and, like, you know, throws his arms up like, oh, what the hell? You know, like, I'm trying to cross here on a snowmobile, whatever. I'm like, okay, number one, you are on basically a major, quote, highway going into or out of Gaylord. Right, short of I-75.
You're driving down the road.
Yeah, I'm going down the road. And you're pissed off because you had to wait on your snowmobile to cross a fucking public roadway. And there's no signs that say, you know, like if you're downtown, it's like, oh, stop for pedestrians, local law, whatever. That makes sense.
You'll even see snowmobile crossing signs that just kind of let you, like, warn you, like, hey, look out, these guys are idiots.
Yeah, but there's nothing that says stop for snowmobiles.
You don't have to yield to a snowmobile.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I remember one time I was on up in the UP. I was doing, I think, 90 on US 41, passing cars in a blizzard.
In your truck or on a snowmobile?
Snowmobile. Nice. I was on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Hauling ass. I think the speed limit's like 55 on that road. And I was doing 90 on the snowmobile because I'm in the ditch. So I'm whipping by them and finally, we're like, yeah, maybe we don't want to go that far north because we were in Hancock and we were going to go up to Calumet, but we decided to turn around. But it was the type of deal where we waited until it was perfectly clear and then whipped around.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, and that's the other thing, like, other than the sled itself, most people, when they're on a snowmobile, all of their gear is black. Helmet, jacket, snow pants, you know, it's all black gear. So if you're riding an all-black sled with all-black gear on, and you're only, the only way that we can see you is based off of your lights, and it's nighttime, dude, a taillight on the back of a snowmobile,
covered by snow.
It gets covered by snow. So, yeah, I can see a headlight, you know, bouncing around or whatever. But, like, if it's blizzard conditions and you've got cars alongside you and everything, like, then nobody's ever going to see you. Mm-hmm. So there's guys that have, like, reflective panels and shit like that. But, yeah, I mean, runners, cyclists do it in the summertime, too. Like, certain groups of people are just stupid in the risk-taking, it, you know, and they get all pissed off. Well, we need to share the road with the cyclists.
It's freaking,
sure.
Yeah, those road bikers.
I'll share the road with you, but also, like, when I have oncoming traffic, you're biking at 15 miles an hour, and there's a shoulder, get your ass in the shoulder, and I'm going to drive past you. Don't drive in the middle of the lane.
They can technically drive in the middle of the lane.
I understand that, but courteous. Right, it's 7:30 in the morning, you know, whatever. I'm trying to get to work.
It's ridiculous.
The sun's coming up, and you're over here riding in the middle of the fucking road on a Tuesday going 15 miles an hour on a main, you know, US 31. Right. I'm like, dude.
That's what I mean. Crazy.
I don't know.
I watched a guy get smoked on a bike once.
I believe it.
And what is that, Avenue E, right by, like, Subway there? There was, like, Tom's Market or whatever.
Yep.
He was cruising down that little sidewalk, and a car was coming down to, you know, whatever. And he's just flying, not even paying attention at all. Doesn't look for traffic. This car's coming. Like, it was, they were both at fault. Like, the car should have seen him. He should have seen the car. No one saw each other. And he just freaking, bam. I was like, whoa.
The other thing is, like, they're supposed to stop at stop signs.
That's the thing is they're allowed to use the road as a road, but they also have to follow the same traffic rules that cars do.
He was on a sidewalk. He's just crossing the street. There was a car coming up to pull up to the stop sign or whatever, and they both didn't see each other, which, like, I kind of side with the car because the biker was flying, like, he was cruising.
And if you're on this, just me personally,
when they don't stop, like, if I'm stopped at a red light or something like that, or a stop sign, and the cyclist doesn't stop, I'll kind of like inch forward to scare him a little bit because I'm a piece of shit. But you know,
that's the other thing though.
They just,
like,
lock up their brakes and freaking bam.
My personal,
I'm not going to hit him, but I'm going to scare him a little bit.
And my personal perspective on that is, like, if I'm going to be riding a bike down the road, similar to when I ride a motorcycle, right? I'm assuming that the car can't see me and I'm going to ride defensively anyway. But I think some cyclists have it in their head that, like, oh, I'm on a bike and I'm allowed to be here and the car needs to, you know, watch out for me or whatever. No, that's not the case. Right. Like, that's how it should work, but
people,
you can't assume people see you and are going to watch
idiots,
out.
Idiots, they're on their phones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I was on, you can believe what you want to believe about this as far as, like, the speed and everything, but I'm on my way back from Traverse last summer on my motorcycle. We're in a 45. We're behind a truck that, like, an old diesel truck, you know, and it's just constant black smoke. Well, I'm on a motorcycle, so it's if I'm like constantly getting rolled coal on, you know, that's not cool. And I'm breathing. I don't have a cabin air filter, you know, on my bike. I'm just breathing in straight exhaust fumes from under my helmet. So I turn on my signal, you know, and it's getting later. It's starting to get dark out, whatever. But I turn on my signal, and I start to merge over. Well, because I'm on a motorcycle, this guy probably didn't see me. So I get over into the lane and start to speed up to go around him, and he merges over. So it's pretty much just the lane tolerance from him, you know, whatever the width of his truck was, for whatever was left of the road until you get to the curb, because this was, you know, like East Bay area.
Mm-hmm.
I just flew past him. You know, then we get up to the light, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, blah, 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 whatever. You know, it's just a kid, so I don't know if he was on his phone. He wasn't paying attention, didn't check his mirror or his blind spot, maybe, because that's probably right where I was at when he came over. But, you know, and that was like a legitimate, in retrospect, I wasn't really doing anything wrong. Like, yeah, I was trying to get around this truck.
Right.
But, like, it's not like I was doing 75 miles an hour. Like I said, we're doing the speed limit because it's starting to get dark, you know, and we're just trying to get home. But, you know, you're that close to just getting fucking smashed.
Yeah. And shit like that happens. I mean,
I was fully prepared for the truck to, like, hit me, and I was just going to let go of the bike and jump off the bike into the grass, like, past the curb. Because I was like, there's no way I can ride this bike up onto the curb and save it. Like, it's toast. If he hits me, I'm just going to jump that way.
Isn't it funny how, like, you have little plans?
Yeah, and it happens, like, oh, shit, and like, it happens so fast. Yeah.
I was going to jump off the bike and do a combat roll.
No. It would have been more like a thud and maybe roll onto my back as I realize that I've broke, like, four different bones. Yeah. But it would have been a lot better than going... hitting the curb and then going under his truck. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like legit. It's like 2,500, you know, lifted, Duramax, whatever. You're just some fucking high school kid. Like, it's not his fault necessarily, but, you know, shit happens. Also, just like, fucking pay attention.
Right.
You know? But I get it because you're a truck is as wide as the lane, basically. And motorcycle is, most of the time, not even as wide as a person. You know, and yeah, we've got a few lights on it and everything. But when you're in traffic, how easily can you differentiate between a motorcycle and a car behind you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Especially in a blind spot.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't check your blind spot when you're merging over, you're not going to see a motorcycle if it's in your blind spot. Sometimes with the car, you can catch it in your side or rear view mirror.
Right.
You will not see a motorcycle. It's too short, too narrow. You won't see it. So it's sketchy. But I don't know. That's a whole different thing to the a different perspective, I guess, to the cyclist. That's how I would ride a bicycle on the road.
Yeah.
Just expecting that people don't see me, wear reflective gear, you know, whatever.
I just try not to ride bicycles on the road at all.
Yeah.
I do it, like, you know, down my
in your subdivision, sure.
The subdivision, yeah, but, like, I've been out on, like, 612 a couple times or whatever,
yeah.
And it's like, I don't like this. It's sketchy.
I would just be...
Because even being on the shoulder, like, I got a mountain bike or whatever, so, like, I'll be way off on the shoulder, and I've had cars that are really close. Like, they're right on the white line. It's like, dude, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, they're, like, roll over to you to intimidate you.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, what?
Right. It's like, I don't like that. It's like, I'm not even on the road. I just...
Yeah.
I don't like doing it.
I don't know. I don't also don't understand, like, we're probably going to piss some people off with this if it reaches the right audience, but, like, I don't understand riding a bike on the road in the same way that I don't understand running on the road. Like, why do you want to run? My mom runs races, but why do you want to run, you know, 100 miles or whatever? You want to do a marathon, a half marathon, even a 5K. Why would you run 3 miles on asphalt when you could just go running on a trail?
I think it's just convenience.
I can add on this a little bit because I used to do a little bit of road biking and obviously running and whatnot in high school.
Did you wear the spandex?
For what?
For biking? Road biking.
No.
Yard sale.
No, when we did road biking, like, we'd be out on back roads, you know, where it's not super busy. Traffic, and even then it's still scary.
Yeah.
Cars come by and, you know, most of the time they get over, but on those off chances where you've got two cars coming, you basically have to stop and just get off way down in the ditch.
Cause
they're not, it's a back road. They don't care about you. And then as far as like running, as far as like why you would want to do it on the road, it's more of because you can't always find a trail that's going to be long enough to get the workout.
Well, and I get it. Not everybody lives around a trail, right? If you're in the city or if you want to run on something flat.
Even it's just convenience.
Even in high school, we would drive to trails sometimes, but then you're relying on getting parents to sign waivers that allow their younger kids to ride with upperclassmen because we don't take a bus. It's the upperclassmen drive the lower, the underclassmen out there.
Right.
And we got to do a bunch of consent forms and everything. And, you know, hey, no fucking around when you've got someone else in your car, and no one listens to that. It's a bunch of high schoolers. So yeah. It's dangerous. We don't do that very often. So it's just easier to run on the road, but we would try our best to run on back roads. And then the other thing is it sucks running laps. Like, when you're doing loops and stuff like that, it just sucks doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Right. Oh, that's my point with the road, though, is, like, you're not really seeing anything because you're on a road. Like, you have whatever is, I guess,
but
okay,
it's still
if
better,
we were
like if I want to go for
Colorado,
a run, if I'm going for a quick run or something, is it, like, I'm going to choose to go, do I want to run around my subdivision 4 or 5 times, or do I want to just make a loop around, you know, down 612 around, you know, Cookask or whatever.
Yeah, and it's definitely better than running on a treadmill.
Or don't want to drive, treadmill or drive to the woods. You know, it's like, oh, man, I just want to, like, I got 45 minutes. I want to get in a quick run.
The other thing is it's easy for, like, distance. When you know, hey, I want to do this far, you run out half the distance and then back.
Yeah. No, I get that.
And then the other thing that I would say is, like, I would say running on the road is fairly scenic. It's not as scenic as running in a trail, but it's better than doing laps.
I got funny.
The other thing is, like, we used to run around the lake all the time, and that's a great run. You get a cool breeze, you can jump in the water if you want.
Yeah.
It's a busy road, though. But a lot of the time, there's sidewalk.
But like you said, you're going to be more scenic if you're on a side road versus, like, if you're biking down the main road.
Yeah.
You know I mean,
if
like, those
like
guys in the summer
up to Boyne or whatever.
But they
you're
they,
just running
like,
on a flat field. That sucks.
There are guys that'll bike like that all the way around Torch Lake.
Right.
Which for me, I'm like, yeah, you're probably seeing some cool stuff, but you're not on US 31 or 131 for a long period of time at least. Like, you're pretty much on side roads. Yeah, that makes sense. But why would you want to bike down a highway when there's just like trees on either side? Seems really boring to me.
Right. I got a funny story for after the podcast on
Biking
slash running slash that carpool lot in Kalkaska there.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess after hours. Knocks of Nature after dark.
Subscribe to our Patreon that doesn't exist yet.
Right.
Yeah, right. After hours. Yeah, I don't know. It's we're getting into that. Yeah, we got on a tangent, dude. But we're getting into that season with bikers and all that. Snow's melting. Ski season's pretty much done.
Yeah.
You might get one more day in, Justin, but I doubt it.
Well, no one wants to go with me, so I probably won't.
Yeah, conditions are going to be terrible. So,
yeah.
No thanks.
I'm going to be honest. I got out skiing more this year than I did last year, so I'm good.
I was happy with it. The last time we went out and it was real sloppy, I was like, eh.
Yeah,
I'm sucked. Good.
I think last time I went out was when I taught Obi.
That's the last time.
Then that was terrible conditions.
Yeah.
The time before that was excellent because it was really, really cold.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. You might get 2 solid months of skiing.
Yeah.
Just because the weather turned so fast. Just like you'd have.
Right, and we had such a good winter this year.
Yeah,
that was the thing. Like, it might be a fluke. Like,
the reason I didn't get out was because I was up in the UP. Mount Bohemia just wasn't open.
Yeah,
they were open one weekend. They had really good snow, and we got out. And then the second time I went out, it was like it was kind of melting a bit, and some of the runs were closed. And then I moved back down here, and of course, the next weekend after I'd moved down here, they got like a foot of snow.
Yeah,
and they're open the rest of the season. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean it sucks. It's just like the snowmobile guys, right?
Mm-hmm. That's why I sold my snowmobile. It's like, this is freaking ridiculous.
Yeah, but even think about summer. You give 2 months where it's like really hot. You can go out on your boat or go to the beach or, you know, do your thing, and that's it.
You can boat from May to October if you
want. If you're just sitting on your boat and drinking, sure. But I'm talking about like swimming. You know what I'm saying?
You can go tubing.
Yeah.
As long as you're good at tubing and don't fall off.
I'm not going swimming in May.
Can someone be good
at
tubing?
Water temperature is like 50 degrees.
You can like take the tube as you roll over the wake and bounce down on it and like do barrel roll and flips and shit.
Really?
Yeah. I was doing that with
I've always just hung on as far as
I can. No, I was doing stuff like that. My dad's buddy Tom, he's got a new old boat, new to him. It's got a decent motor, it's great for tubing. It creates a nice big wake, so we're having fun, and he's ripping around on the kids, and he's like, man, they're too young to really start ripping hard on them. You know, like,
you're like, all right,
I'm like,
put me in, coach.
I'm sitting there, and he's like, you can go. I'm like, nah, prep not. Finally, I'm like, I could tell he's getting antsy. He wants to go throw someone around. I'm like, all right, I'll go. He goes, yeah. I go, yeah. There ain't no way you can throw me off, though. I said it just to piss him off. And he's like, oh, you think I can't throw you off? I'm like, no, I don't. And sure enough, he couldn't. He was getting real upset, too, because he was getting violent with it.
Yeah. I love it when you do, like, figure eights. And it's just, you just go through chop, just pop, 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 pop.
Yep. Oh, yeah. You were doing all sorts of that. He was whipping me in circles, and I'm whipping right up along the side of the boat.
Yep.
Yeah. It was fun. The kids thought it was hilarious when I was flipping over on the tube, and they were like, oh, he fell. The first time it happened, they're like, oh, he fell, he flipped. And then he's like, right as I flip back over, he starts slowing down. I'm like, no, keep going. And then after that, every time I fell over, he's just like, well, I'm not going to stop until the tube goes flying up in the air.
Yeah. So, you're just hanging on upside down.
Oh, yeah, it'd be upside down. It'd go upside down, and I'd like roll it back over upright. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it's crazy. I like, there are certain tubes that will like pull you up into the air. So mm-hmm. you're like parasailing.
Yeah.
Oh, and I was the other thing I was doing is going no-handed.
Yeah.
On the straightaways at first, and then I started doing it as he was whipping me in circles. I was going no-handed, and he got really upset about that.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Is that a tube you sit in or lay on?
It was, the kids could sit in it, but it was too small for me. Like, I was laying on it. It was a donut, but I was laying on it.
Yeah.
And the handles sucked. They were hard plastic. They weren't like the neoprene filled or whatever. They sucked. My knuckles hurt really bad after that.
Yeah. That's funny. I used to really enjoy tubing because it's like...
Oh, yeah. Well, we grew up doing it, too. Ripped. My brother and I would go all the time. We had donut tubes. We had one of the ones that you sit down in and, like, face forward. And that one was just too much drag for the boat. We had to sell it. And then we also had the, like, the slice tubes, the big circles. They're just a wedge.
Yeah, you just lay down on it?
Yeah, we did all sorts of different tubes. I think the wedge ones are my favorite. Because those ones will catch air if you...
Yeah.
Those catch air pretty good.
And they flip pretty easy.
And they flip. They are, if they get too wide, you can't really do the whole rolling thing with them. That's the nice thing about a donut.
Yeah.
The donuts are really easy to roll around on. But we had one was super thin. I forget if it was called the wedge or the slice, but it was an airhead. And it was like purple and gray. It was super skinny. And that thing, if you got going a certain speed... It would suck under the water.
Oh, I've seen that.
And it would, like, you'd sit there and you'd be underwater getting dragged through the water. And we all refuse to let go. That's the thing. It's like when you're tubing, you don't let go.
Yeah.
You know? So we're getting dragged through the water and shit. And it's just pulling on the motor hard because it won't come up until you let go of it. So, or if the boat stops. But
yeah. That was the first time I tried wakeboarding. It was so difficult because... as soon as you fall over, the board catches the water, and then it just rips the handle right out of your hands. Yeah. It's hard. It's not as easy as you, like, I thought it was going to be like skimboarding, combination of like skimboarding and snowboarding. No, it's hard.
I've never done it. I've water skied, but that was about it. And I haven't water skied it since I was a kid.
Yeah. It's weird for me, at least. Fun. You got to have a proper setup for it. Like, there are people who try to wakeboard behind just, like, a normal boat that has, like, a tow hook for tubing. You have to have, like, an actual boat.
We went skiing behind our tubing boat, which was just a deep V-bottom, your deep sidewall V-bottom fishing boat.
Yeah.
Super long and skinny. And with an old 80 horse. I think the motor was a 79 Mercury 80, and then the boat was a 78 Starcraft or Smoker Craft. And, I mean, they're old. and it was too much. And the skis that we had were old wooden water skis.
Oh, yeah.
Everything, and it was just like the rubber cuffs that slip over your feet. Everything we had was super old, but we got up and we were water skiing on it a little bit. But my buddy, he had a sweet jet boat. We used to do, we'd go running on Saturdays, and his parents would cook us breakfast, and then we'd spend the day out dinking around on his boat. He had kneeboard, wakeboard, skis, tubes. It was fun.
The wake surfing is the crazy stuff. It's basically like a skimboard, but you're on the front of the wake.
But you could have a special boat for that that has ballast in it to get the wake how you want.
Yeah. But that's the stuff that's like, whoa, that's impressive.
Right.
If you're good at it. Yeah.
I should get water skis this year.
Whose boat are you going to go on?
My parents.
No. Oh, okay. I was going to say, neither of us have a boat. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because my brother sold his fishing boat, so. Whatever. He just wouldn't let me turn it into a bass boat. He wanted, like, a crazy amount of money. He actually sold it. It was just like a, it was like a 17-foot John boat, basically. It was flat bottom, but just like 17-foot aluminum fishing boat.
Should have made it into a bow fishing boat.
I wanted to turn it into like a fishing boat, you know, like a prop, like put a deck on it, whatever.
What did he use it for?
Nothing. It sat. Huh. It was a fishing boat. We took it out twice, I think. He sold it for like $2,700. I was going to give him $1,000.
Wow.
And I'm like, you can also use it when I'm done with it. He's like, no. But yeah, he sold it for a lot of money.
That's crazy.
I don't remember exact. It might. I don't think it was quite like three, but I think 25 probably somewhere in there. He got a pretty good chunk of change for it, all things considered. So I don't know, but I also don't like. I don't know. I've never really had great success fishing from a boat. You gotta really know a lake, or you have to really know how to find areas. Because if you're just out in the middle of a lake, you're not catching anything.
I'm not huge into fishing.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, like, I like to go stand in a river and, like, fly fish.
You just like the action.
Yeah, it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's just fun to go stand in a river. And I like, but, like, being out on a boat, like a bass boat fishing, like, I'll do it a couple times a summer, but, like, I'm not into it. Like,
yeah.
I
really enjoy, like, early in the morning, you get out at, like, 7 a.m., you stay out till noon.
Yeah.
I grew up doing it, though, and by no means am I an expert fisherman, but I do know, like, you know, you look for drop-offs, and there are certain not too weedy areas or stumpy areas.
Yeah, I mean, if I had, like, the right equipment, you could probably figure it out.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, knowing, hey, these lures work good for these fish and this color, but it all changes, so depending on the time of year. And then the other thing is just knowing the lake. Like, you go to a random lake, it's so hard. Even the lake that I grew up on, I'm still learning that lake. That lake is a mystery when it comes to fishing. There are certain spots that are like, okay. But trying to walleye, that's the big thing out there. It's like trying to catch walleye because they're in there and they're really great, but it's really hard to catch them out there. Same thing, crappie. They've got really good crappie out there, but it's really hard to find the spots.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like a lot of times you'll be trying to catch a walleye or largemouth, and all you're catching is smallmouth. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like every time I go fishing, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go catch the smallmouth spawn, and I'm catching perch the whole time. You know? Or, oh, okay, I'm going to go fish largemouth bass beds, and I'm catching smallmouth the whole time. Like, I clearly don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's harder to find smallmouth at that lake. It's all largemouth out there. There are smallmouth there, but I feel like couldn't tell you last time I caught smallmouth.
It's just something different, right? Like, it's not quite. I definitely don't get into it the same as I do hunting or any of it, but it's something different, and it's fun. You know, the guys that go fishing like all day, every day, I don't get that.
I don't. When I was younger, I would do that on like kayaks, and my brother and I had a boat for a little while. When my parents got a pontoon, they gave us the old boat. We'd go fishing like all day, but it was kind of, we got to the point where we're like, yeah, this is kind of boring.
Yeah, I used to do it when I was a kid.
Just
like,
yeah.
You know, like a teenager or whatever, me and my buddy would ride our bikes down to the, you know, Arbutus docks or whatever.
Yeah, it's something to do.
We'd fish every day just because it was something to do.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. There for a while, I caught
now
crayfish
every day. Now it's more of a relaxation to get away from everyone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We'll be doing a long weekend at the campground or whatever, and you got all the kids, you got the dogs, you got the women, you got everything. So me and Tom, we'd go out fishing, and we'd stay out there from, you know, 7 to noon or sometimes later if the fishing was really good. But it's just a nice break from everything. Kind of relax, just quiet.
Yeah.
And if you do hook into fish, like, it's fun reeling them in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you actually catch them, it's fun. It's when you're not catching them. That's most of the time I don't. So it gets harder to enjoy, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, whatever. We're probably going to be wrapping this up here shortly. But is there anything you wanted to add about tack?
I don't think so. I've been toying with changing arrow setups.
You're going to Crystal, right? Or you're going to Boyne?
Crystal.
Okay.
I wanted to go to Boyne, but then I have my kid that weekend, and I don't know if I'll be able to have a sitter or whatever. So, I didn't want to buy the ticket and then not be able to find someone.
I've got a ticket. So.
To Boyne?
Yeah. Worst case scenario, worst case scenario, you don't go, but if you have somebody available and you can get out there, and we have, you know,
like you have another ticket, you have an extra
no. But my point is, if you just show up, there's a chance that you'd be able to shoot with me, right?
Yeah. And like Boyne's not just that far from there. My house, so like I could just show up and
right. But also, if you wanted to just hang out, we could probably do like a non-shooter thing.
Yeah,
and especially at Crystal, when we shoot together. We'll try to get some content up for the Knox Nature stuff.
Super sweet.
I also talked about getting stickers made for TAC. So if anybody listening sees us at Crystal Mountain or Boyne Mountain, we'll be probably wearing Knox Nature hats. So
we should get t-shirts.
Yeah, maybe some t-shirts, whatever. But we'll have stickers.
Get your
and stuff, so
your black rifle coffee and dump it in your Yeti.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
we do have Knox Nature Yetis, but that'll be like a early morning. Most guys aren't up that early. I go out and I'll talk to the vendors, like the guys that I know, you know, guys from Rec, guys from Tethered, but I don't usually see a whole lot of people there at 7 in the morning. No. So, yeah, toying with arrow setups, because you said, what, 400?
It's just over 400, like 410 grain, 407 or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know, which is not a bad 3D weight. Like it's.
I don't know why you're stuck on this carbon impact though.
Just because I've had really good luck with them. I've had super good luck with them. They don't break. Like I've just had.
Nick, you ever heard the phrase "if it ain't broke, don't fix it"?
No, but he's saying it is broke. He wants a heavier arrow.
I want a heavier, which they probably make.
For hunting,
they probably make a shaft that is heavier. I just gotta get. I don't know.
I also don't think your arrow's spined correctly.
It's not. It's too weak.
Because they do their spines weird, don't they?
They do.
Like Carbon Express has backward spines.
And I just bought what my dad was using. Because like compound stuff, I had no idea. Like when I bought my compound, I had no idea what I was doing. So I just bought what my dad was using. And he was shooting a, you know, Browning from the freaking, you know.
Probably shooting 50 pounds.
Yeah, super light, you know, like whatever. They worked for him. So, like, I was like, I don't know.
Now you're shooting probably 29 and a half inch draw at 65 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got, what do you have, 150 grains up front?
Yeah.
So you're underspined for sure. Yeah. If it's anything less than what would basically be a 350 or a 340, you know, depending on the brand.
Yeah.
But like I said, Carbon Express is weird because their strongest spine is a 500. Or a 600.
Right.
That they go the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Carbon Impact is the same way.
They have like, it's like my shaft right now is a 6,500.
Yeah, see, that makes no sense to me.
It's just some random number. Yeah. Like, it doesn't, it's not an industry standard. I just got to go in there and get some new arrows.
But yeah.
I don't know. I just got to see if I want to do like a 3D setup and a hunting setup, or if I just want to do one that's kind of a compromise between both. It's kind of what I'm leaning towards.
If you're doing a compromise between both, I would try to hit like a, probably like a 430.
Yeah.
You know, because it kind of puts you right in the middle. Because with your draw length, we're going to have very similar arrow weights. Right? Like, I have a 29-inch draw, but I shoot a 30-inch arrow. Just because I like to have that little bit of extra length.
Right. I do, too.
So, if you were to set up, say, for instance, a RIP or a VAP TKO, like what I shoot, carbon weave, that's a 470-grain arrow with a 100-grain point and a 50-grain outsert. But if you were to shoot, you know, like an Easton Sonic, like which is my 3D, that's a 370-grain setup. So if you find something in between, like you shoot, say, a Easton 6.5 Beeman or a Carbon Express Maxima Red or, you know, like a, I don't know, a VAP or a RIP TKO V3, which is a 3,000th straightness. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not the match grade. It's a little bit lighter, and you know, you cut it to 29 inches. Maybe you can get into that like 430, 440. It's still a pretty lightweight setup, but it's also going to give you the power, especially with a 150-grain tip. You're going to have that.
Yeah.
The higher FOC, I guess, that you're looking for. You'll still have plenty of momentum, especially for whitetail hunting. I mean, sure, if you were going to go shoot black bear, it'd be like, hey, Justin, just because you enjoy shooting a heavy arrow, you know, go build a 650-grain arrow for black bear.
Right.
You know, out of a compound. Because I'm sure you'd probably shoot like a 900-grain arrow out of your trap bow. But
yeah, maybe. 1,100.
Yeah, wow. That's really heavy.
I have that one arrow, that fiberglass.
The fiberglass one, yeah.
I don't know what it weighs because it maxed out my scale. But it's heavy.
We should put it on both scales, see what it is.
Yeah.
Like my scale and your scale at the same time. That'd be goofy. Calculate it.
Or just a regular scale. It might work for your scale.
What brand of scale do you have?
I don't know. It's a reloading scale, so it's not actually an aero scale.
Okay. Mine's an October Mountain Products.
Yeah, so it'd probably work for yours.
Actually, I think I have...
Mine's made for powder, so it's not.
Yeah. I used to have a Last Chance, but I had the older generation. I don't think I have it anymore because the last I remember, it got like all fucked up, like uncalibrated because I put my hunting arrow on there. It said it weighed like, you know, 136 grains. But yeah. I know that's not right.
Right. Yeah,
so
my scale's like super nice down to the, you know, hundredth of a grain.
Bone. Yeah. I don't think
it doesn't.
Mine'll do.
I think it maxes out at 1,000 grains.
Mine'll do down to the thousandth. No, it'll do hundreds, not thousands. It'll do hundreds.
Two decimal places?
Yeah. So, because it'll do like 437, you know, 437 grains, 0.65.
Yeah.
You know? I think so. Maybe it is just one decimal place. I don't know.
For arrow,
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
What I need is a draw scale. Because
I want a spine tester.
Yeah,
I want a spine tester and a draw scale. I think that'd be
so.
Cool.
Here's the weird thing. Like with a traditional carbon arrow, because you could do like spine aligned, whatever, which is like what those victories are. But that carbon weave, what I've noticed, the spine. This is just from shooting and whatever testing I could do without a proper spine tester, right? The carbon weave seems to be more consistent and less affected by that seam, right? Because they're rolled into a circle or a cylinder. It seems to be less affected by that. So I don't know if it is because you have all of these like different flexing portions. It just like, I don't know if it's the structure of it or if it's just because like the, you know, those victories are V1s, so they're right. really well made. I don't remember having, like, because I used match grade Axis arrows, and I don't remember having any problems with those, but maybe it's victory just makes like a really nice arrow. Because my Sonics, this is my last year with the Sonics that I have. Because the ones that I'm using right now for 3D are 3,000ths straightness.
Yeah.
Because I actually bought those arrows right when the Sonics came out, and they didn't have match grade shafts available yet. So I stripped the vanes off of them, measured each shaft individually, measured each insert and each weight individually, and then measured the three, like bundles of three vanes, measured everything individually, and paired it to get them as close to all of the same weight as possible. Hmm. Right? That's the best I could do to get right. close to match grade. That sounds crazy to some people, I'm sure, but that difference in half an inch at 120 yards, if that is the difference between you hitting a 10 and an 8, that was gross.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do that.
But if that's the difference between you hitting a 10 or an 8, like, that sucks. Right. And I want that difference there. Yeah. So I don't know. Really, really finicky stuff. But I don't want to discourage you from carbon impact if that's your thing. I just don't want to. I don't want you to write off other arrow brands because you say you've had really good luck with them, but maybe you switch to another brand and you're like, wow, I didn't realize how much better my grouping could be. Like, these are so much more consistent or whatever, right?
You're getting rid of those Sonics?
Yeah, I think
switch?
So. Yeah, I'm going to switch to. I'm going to probably still shoot the Sonics. I'm just going to buy actual match grade ones. Oh, okay. Basically, like, when I bought them, I had a dozen of them, and this will be my third and fourth Total Archery Challenge event with them, but it's like the, what, sixth, and so the first tack of the year, which is Boyne, actually. I think Boyne's actually first.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because I think Boyne is the seventh and eighth, and then like the 7th through the 9th that weekend, somewhere in like the first week of June, and Crystal's the second week. Hmm. But anyway, it'll be like by the time I'm done with that and then we shoot Northwoods, I'll have like 10 3D events in with those.
Yeah.
And so, you know, from a dozen arrows, I'm down to, I think, 8. You know, I've lost a few of them in preparation and then in actual events. Last year actually was the first year I didn't lose any arrows at TAC.
Really?
But most 3D events, I'll grenade an arrow on a tree or something like yeah. that. One arrow. Except for, well, the Northwoods Challenge. But I usually do dumb stuff when we're practicing, back up to like 140 and try to shoot through stuff. Or we're shooting trad and I try to shoot a grizzly bear at 60 yards and shoot 10 feet over his head.
And just freaking...
So
you'd be lucky if that was 10 feet. That was like
15.
It was a lot.
It was less than 20. It wasn't. It was still in the trees. Those trees were only 30 feet tall or whatever.
I really want to shoot 3D now. It's like I'm ready for it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure when the Northwoods course is going to open up, but. It'll be good fun to get back into that. I mean, we really don't have long because I think it opened up March last year, late March.
We had an early spring last year, so.
I'm sure it'll be here probably mid-April.
I would think so.
So.
Yeah, mid about a month. April.
My goal. Oh, that was loud. My goal, I'm getting that new bow. I want to get that all set up, whatever. I'm not entirely sure. I'm definitely going to shoot Crystal with the new bow because I've already shot all of those courses with the Traverse. I'll probably bring both to Boyne.
Yeah. I held the new.
Because I have 2 days at Boyne.
I held the new Prime Form. And
did you shoot it?
I did not shoot it. There was a guy shooting longbows in there. And I didn't want to
Oh.
I didn't want to shoot it.
This is going to turn into the Sniffle podcast.
Right. But
you should have. You should have shot it.
I want to shoot it at some point, but
it was dumb that you didn't because you were already there.
It just wasn't the day for it. There was like, I was like,
Whatever you say, bud. Do you think you'll buy one though?
No.
It's weird, isn't it?
I really liked it. Like I picked it up, and it doesn't look as weird in person as it does on the internet.
It shoots weird.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is it doesn't. I mean, it makes sense, right? It doesn't shoot like an aluminum bow because it's not all aluminum. It doesn't shoot like a carbon bow.
Right.
It has more hand shock than I would have thought.
Yeah.
For it having, like, the carbon separating it, I would say it has about as much hand shock as, like, a carbon Hoyt. Probably not as bad as, like, the Gen 1 PSE carbon bows, but probably pretty on par with, like, an RX-8. The RX-7 actually was a better bow than the RX-8 and
the RX-9. I'll be curious, like, the next couple years, how they're going to improve on that. You know, it's the first one. So I'll be curious how the next couple years go.
I don't know how much more you can really do to it unless they just go full carbon, which they should. If they want a carbon bow, they should just go full carbon.
I kind of like where they're going with it, though, with the hybrid. Kind of like
but that's what I'm saying. Put aluminum rods in the carbon where you need the extra strength.
Oh, go the other way around instead of.
Yeah, because then your bow can actually be lighter than an aluminum bow.
Right.
Like they've added carbon to it, but the bow still weighs 4 pounds.
It's not that much lighter.
And you can get, like, for instance, a Matthews Lift RS, which is like 3.5 pounds. Granted.
It's
the Lift RS is 27.5 inches. Right. The Forum's 34 inches.
Yeah.
You know, so 4 pounds on a 34-inch bow is great, but the Matthews Lift X 31.5 or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Their long bow with a riser length that's pretty similar to the Prime because the new Matthews bows are beyond parallel limbs.
Oh.
You know? That bow weighs 4 pounds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's not that much lighter than other bows, but I don't know. It's interesting. It's something different.
It is different. I mean, I like that they're trying to innovate. I wish more companies would do. I'm fucking disgusted that I'm even saying this, but shout out to Bowtech for having the first type of technology to where you can move the cam without a bow press. Because Matthews just last year introduced limb shift technology. So you take the cap off of your axle, basically, and there's an Allen screw in the actual axle, the cam axle, and you just turn it, and that'll shift. It's called limb shift technology, but it actually shifts the cam side to side to tune it rather than doing, like, top hat tunings. So it'll take care of cam lean and, you know, help you shoot a bullet hole if you want to have a true center shot with your rest, and then you can cam tune. With a solo cam, that's super easy because you have a split yoke, and you can just bada-bing, bada-boom, and if you're slightly, you know, high or low in your tears, you can either tighten up both sides of the yoke, or you could do what I do, which is tighten the string, you know, add or remove in your string or your bus cable. There's like four different ways to go about it.
Yeah.
But it's super easy to tune a solo cam bow. Matthews' newer bows, so from 2015 to last year, basically, they're super difficult. And then they introduced that top hat tuning system, and it worked. Once you got it, it held tune all the time. You could swap a string out, and you'd probably have a little bit of rest adjustment, but it would stay tuned. But it's a pain in the ass to get to that point because you got to pull your shims out, pull all your top hat tuning shims out. You know, the cam comes off. You're pulling the whole bushing. You pull everything off. And you have to have a press. The Lift RS. Hold on just 1 second. The Lift RS can be completely built without a bow press. You could have that bow. I could tune it and everything.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you get the string on and off? Like, how?
The peep sight?
Yeah.
They have a... Oh, my gosh. Sorry. They have a short little string that can attach to two wings on either side, either cam. And you pull the string towards the grip of the bow and hook it on there. It's called the stay of field system.
Really?
That relieves tension from your main string. And at that point, split the string, put your peep sight in, let tension back down, and then you just do everything under tension, which I normally do. Yeah. I'll tie my D-loop on under tension. Oh. I tie in the peep sight under tension. And with the limb-driven rest, you don't have to split the cable. If you were using a cable-driven rest, you could just do a football clamp if you didn't have a bow press. Right. But with the limb-driven rest, you just put the little pad on there and go around the limb, yeah. Come up. So, yeah, you don't need to do anything. And then you just use limb shift technology to tune it.
Huh.
And all of your mods can be swapped out without a bow press. Basically, the only thing you need a bow press for anymore is replacing strings and limbs and cams and shit.
Yeah.
So anytime you really need to take all of the tension, all of completely the tension off. Out of the bow. Yeah. So, yeah, it's exciting, but I want to do a bow build on that. So I might try to do the bow build without my bow press and just do it all based off of the new Matthews features.
Do a YouTube series?
Yeah, be sweet. Because we also talked about doing some pretty cool test videos. So maybe we'll film a couple of those and then save it for the another episode. So we're going to wrap things up here. But, yeah, appreciate everyone for listening. And, yeah, next episode, episode 20. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, well.
There it is.
Woo.
Catch you next time.
Go out and buy your fishing tags before they raise.